Shout out Shaq Edwards.
The majesty.
Oh my goodness.
It's professional wrestling.
K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-O-K-
Hey, everybody. This is WWE Champion CM Punk. Straight Edge Superstar CM Punk.
This is WWE Champion Big E, and I'm with my guy, my man, the bald legend himself.
Hey, everybody. Daniel Bryan here, hanging out with Rosenberg at Rosenberg Radio. Do you want to hear him talk about wrestling? Yes!
Hey, y'all, what's up? This is Bianca Belair, the EST of WWE, the strongest, the fastest, the roughest, the toughest, the quickest, the greatest, the best, and I'm hanging out with Pete Rosenberg.
Ooh-ooh! Hear that?
That's the cheap heat!
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, it's the world's number one sports and recreation podcast, Cheap Heat. Hey, it's Friday, April 26th, and joining me on the program today, in addition to producer Emilio Sparks, who's coming to you live from Staten Island, we have 36 at 35 Dipperstein. Hey, Dip, how are you?
Hi, good. How are you?
You know, I received a tweet this week from someone saying they wanted Emilio to replace you on the show. They said, enough Dip already, more Emilio.
Oh, yeah. That makes sense. I get that.
You understand, don't you?
Yeah, of course. Of course. Who would want more Dipperstein? The answer is everyone. Okay.
Okay. Especially, I'll tell you what, you know who wants
Schmigeggy.
And nobody wants Dipperstein more than
it's spiceless.
No one wants more Dipperstein than one person. Dipperstein. He loves Dipperstein. Have you gone back and listened to the show that I asked you to listen to yet?
No.
You normally love to listen to yourself. Why haven't you gone back to listen?
I need the weekend to have any leisure time.
Well, listen, I hope everyone's been enjoying the program so far. The big interview that the big daddy interview that I've been trying to get, I don't know, now I'm here, maybe it's happening Monday and I'll drop it Tuesday. I don't know. I'm not living and dying with it. I hope we get it. But I will tell you, today, for the first time ever, I haven't even told Emilio that I'm promoting it this way, but damn it, I want to try something different. It is our surprise guest. That's right. A Friday something with a surprise guest. We don't even put the guest name on the podcast. You got to listen to the podcast. And when you hear that person's theme song kick on, you go, oh, we're going to hear from so-and-so. Now, listen, as the days go on, we're going to post clips from the person and you'll figure it out. But Emilio, do you think this is a terrible idea? I like the idea of people listening to me and Dip and not knowing who they're going to get in the middle of this podcast.
Yeah, I thought it's not the best idea because how do you promote a podcast that's only been indie 2 weeks?
But hear me out. We're going to promote the guest on social channels and put out the videos and all that. But for all the people we already have who get the download and look at the episode, they don't always need to see the person's name in the title. They see it's
no,
a
they do.
Why?
Because that,
why?
Means, but because that means they're more inclined to listen to the episode.
Maybe, and sometimes they may decide in advance, I don't like that person, I don't want to hear an interview with them. And then they hear them and go, like this guy who we have on today's maybe special guest episode of Cheap Heat. There are people listening who are going to go, I do not like this person. And here's the thing, I believe, and we talk about this in the interview, this guy was so good as a worker that to this day, even as people now sort of understand what wrestling is, I think, Dip, that he is still a heel to people. Like, it literally, the work is so good. They've made judgments about his persona, his political affiliations, all of these things. They have no idea. And I know for a fact that they're wrong. But that's how good the character is. And we talk about that. So whether it's a surprise for you or not, we hope you'll stick around. How about this? I won't plug it at least right now. So after me and Dip talk, you'll hear who we'll be joined by, an absolute legend who brings us incredible stuff today about his career, the people he worked with, thoughts on a bunch of new stuff, just a general catch up and chat that I hope you'll enjoy on this Friday. Dip, you were very excited to get on the show. You told me you had a scorching, scorching hot take about the big match from Dynasty between Danielson and Ospreay. So I with that, I hand you the microphone.
I finally watched the match, and people had been crawling out from every rock on earth to tell me that it was the greatest match in the history of wrestling. This was the most cathartic they've ever felt as a wrestling fan.
Is that the word they used?
Yeah.
Okay, keep going.
Yes. you know, people were throwing up tens the whole time. You know, this was the greatest televised match in the history of American television wrestling. And I got to tell you, I watched it two nights ago, finally.
Okay.
Okay. I finally caught up and was able to watch the show. And it was a pretty good match. I wouldn't say it was the best match I've ever seen. The moves are cool and this and that, but here's the truth.
Go ahead. Tell us the truth, please.
I'm gonna say what needs to be said.
Thank you for saying what needs to be said.
There was no in order for it to be the greatest match in the history of American television, okay, it needs to have a reason for existing.
I agree.
The match was just two great wrestlers going out there and doing what they do. And that is the issue, unfortunately, with AEW. They can put on these matches that are, you know, great matches, second to none. But there is no storyline, real storylines to accompany them. So I'm watching Will Ospreay, who, in my opinion, could be the greatest living wrestler right now, and Daniel Bryan, who's obviously one of the greatest living wrestlers, putting on their best work. But I'm not compelled because I just don't know why these two of these people are in the ring together, other than that they're both good.
Well, that's why I would argue with you when some days you would come in after an episode of Dynamite and you would start like waxing poetic about whatever Young Bucks FTR match or whatever. And I'd go, yeah, sure, the wrestling was great, but like I just didn't have a reason. And I'll say this about the Danielson-Ospreay match. It was fantastic, and I love that it happened. And that hopefully we'll get more from them. But I agree. I think the way that people jumped out the window with it was twofold. Number one,
it was crazy. Jumping out the windows.
Number one, it's because of the guys that it was. It's by its nature, it's a dream match. And I totally get that. Number two, it was a really, really good match. Number three, I think there was a little bit of a desire to have a bounce back moment for AEW coming off of a horrifying week the week before with the CM Punk footage. They were at such an all-time low. And now, unfortunately, we have to report their all-time lowest number this week. They didn't break 700,000 people watching Dynamite. And there are people obviously rooting for these good moments. Frankly, count me among them. I want the good moments to happen because I truly believe wrestling is at its best when you have multiple places that you can get good content. For me, I thought it was really good. I totally agree with Dip that it was a little bit overstated. Had this been their third match in a trilogy and there had been a story and we'd seen what is really there, you're not just basing on the fact that these are both international wrestling darlings, but there's a real story. Yeah, to me, that's where the story lives and dies more than the chain wrestling and the awesome stuff they do in the ring. So I'm with Dip. It was awesome, but maybe it would technically be a 5-star match, but in terms of the kind of fan that I am, 5-star match, 5-star match. I need a story too. I'm with you on that.
It was a story though.
What is the story, Emilio? You're the biggest AEW fan here. Tell us what the big story was.
There was a subtle nuance of who's the best wrestler alive, basically. Ospreay and Danielson needed to prove to themselves that they could beat the other. And then you had Don Callis and his goons that tried to help Ospreay leading up and kayfabed Ospreay with their intentions because Will wanted to straight up do it himself. When they claim who's the best wrestler in the world, it's all about ego and bragging rights. That's kind of the story.
Dip would argue, you're new to the show, so I'll tell you. Dip would argue that stories that involve it's about the championship or who's best is not a story. We want a story. We want a why do you hate each other? What happened? What was the thing beyond? Like if we wanted stories that were simply I'm better than you, Dip would watch sports. He doesn't watch sports. He watches novellas, aka wrestling. And we want bochinche. We want gossip. We want problems.
Yeah, we want bochinche.
We want bochinche. We want filth. We want.
But again, action. Isn't the bochinche Don Callis and his goons trying Ospreay with their intentions?
Bochinche adjacent.
the definition of bochinche adjacent. He's right. He's right. But by the way, that is the last thing I'm going to do this week is complain about anything from Dynasty because the thing to complain about is I have to say this. What was Swerve Strickland doing being on in segment 3 and having an eliminator match with Kyle Fletcher? Are you out of your mind?
That was a big problem for me, that part of it. I actually enjoyed this week's Dynamite.
No.
Frankly, even though it was a good episode. I like the Tony Khan thing. I thought it was funny.
We'll get there. Hold on. Let's not give short shrift. We'll get to that for sure.
But yes, Swerve Strickland being in some bizarre gauntlet match after he wins the title made absolutely no sense.
I tuned in. The reason I tuned in, you know, and I watch 75% of the time. But the reason this week that I tuned in was to see Swerve Strickland, the new champion, the first black heavyweight champion in AEW. I want to see what it's like when him and Nana get to come out and celebrate the championship. And what I get was random nonsense to start the show, followed up by Swerve comes out like he's a regular wrestler, has a match with Kyle Fletcher, fine match, has to just have a match that he wins, and then afterwards, 15 minutes later, Willow Nightingale, God bless her, gets a full celebration for the TBS championship? What are we doing?
Oh, I'm thinking right here. I'm thinking he wasn't in the gauntlet match. He wrestled Kyle Fletcher.
In an eliminator match.
Right, eliminator.
A championship eliminator match.
Wait, what was it? Yeah. Was that basically like the first match in it? I can't even remember.
Yes, honestly. It's the first match. It's basically, if Kyle Fletcher beats the champion, he gets to get a championship match. But like, why should Swerve have to do that 2 days removed after getting the championship? I don't understand. And then of course the thing that everyone is talking about is Tony Khan getting assaulted by the Elite. Dip, you liked it.
I liked it, but then you have Jack Perry, who has like such a unique, interesting look as a wrestler, and now he just looks like one of the Young Bucks. And I know maybe that's on purpose, but they've ruined his look. Like,
by the way,
he looks just like a guy now.
By the way, Dip and I are really in lockstep this week because I felt the exact same way. I was like, I get it. Heels grow beards and like chest hair and stuff. I know like there's this old school wrestling thing about changing the look of someone, and Jack Perry by nature looks like such a baby face. I get that. But when the car door opens and he gets out, he was just generic bearded wrestler now. He didn't look like Jack Perry. I was like, oh yeah, I forgot. Cause keep in mind, I didn't even see the full Jack Perry segment last week. I read about it. I knew that happened. I knew that he was now going to be back. So yeah, when I saw him, I was just so underwhelmed. I was like, but he doesn't look like Jack Perry anymore. And I get it, but you're right. He looks like a young buck of Jace. And maybe you're right.
Yeah, he looks like a baby buck.
So it's obviously an emergency, in a case of emergency, break glass kind of deal. Because things are bad. Tony Khan knows people hate his guts right now. And he's like, let me just get beaten up in the middle of the ring. And now what's the follow-up going to be? And is Tony Khan going to be in the middle of it? Because I'll tell you what you don't want. You don't want a series of promos where we're forced to root for Tony Khan as like the baby face on the microphone. Like that's not going to be, people aren't going to root for that.
No, we don't want that.
Nobody.
That's not good.
That's not what you want.
I think it's a one and done thing, or like maybe one more week and he's angry about it, but I don't think they're going to, he can't be on TV as Vince McMahon every week, dude. That's not going to work.
Yeah, but he also, this also can't be one and done. You can't beat the hell out of the guy who runs the company and that's it. And like, remember when we beat up Tony Khan? Anyways, this is, once you've done it, Dip, we're in it now. Now, Dip, it's everybody's favorite time of the year, especially you, the WWE draft. Oh, you look forward to it every year. You love it. You love it. That time when wrestling and sports get sort of blended together and there's reportedly new draft rules. Do you want to hear the new draft rules?
I just want to say, going back, just putting a button on the AEW of it all, I don't want to take anything away from Will Ospreay. Okay. The guy is so mage.
He didn't take away.
He feels like I don't want to take away because he feels like he's like the jumping and the things that he's doing. He feels like a Tekken character. He feels like martial law.
He's awesome.
He feels like a video game guy.
The only thing I can't take about him right now was his decision to mention Triple H, which was so stupid. But besides that, I am so high on Will Ospreay. Super duper high. Yeah. All right, here are the rules. Champions on each brand will be protected and are not eligible to be drafted. So Damian, Becky, Awesome Truth, Sami Zayn will all be on Raw. Cody, Bayley, A-Town Down Under, Logan Paul will all be on SmackDown. Okay, good. I like that. At least we know there's some sense to be made of that. Even though their status as champions allows them to go to both brands, WWE Women's Tag Team Champions Asuka and Kairi Sane are eligible to be drafted. They will be assigned to that brand if they lose the titles. Okay, so they're going to do something with that. Friday's SmackDown will feature four rounds of draft picks being announced. Each round will consist of the brands making two picks apiece for a total of 16 picks being announced, eight for SmackDown, eight for Raw. Monday's Raw will feature six rounds of draft picks being announced. Each round will consist of the brands making two picks apiece, a total of 24 picks, 12 for Raw and 12 for SmackDown. SmackDown will have the first pick on Friday. Raw will have the first pick on Monday. And rosters will go into effect on Monday, May 6th, right after Backlash. By the way, that is something I don't love, though. We do all of this before a pay-per-view, a PLE, and then it doesn't count until after. I always find that to be awkward.
The other thing that's awkward about the draft is that you clearly see who's, like, to me, I live in kayfabe. And so to me, everyone's important, and anyone can be important at any moment in wrestling, as long as they have a great storyline going on, or you know, everyone could win the championship at a certain point or whatever. This, like, the draft clearly shows you who they feel is important and who is, like, the upper echelons of the roster.
Yeah.
Like, to me, as you know how I feel, like, Ivar is just as important as Seth Rollins.
Right.
So, but Ivar will be, you know, in the one of the last people drafted. But, you know, why? Why can't Ivar be a guy who wins the championship one day and is somewhat interesting that you want on your show? It just, the whole thing is, you know, there's no real competition between the two brands. And so it's, you know, it's a popularity contest rather than an actual draft. So, you know, like if they did this right before Survivor Series or something, and this resulted in, like, brand versus brand, why don't they just lump the two of those things together, you know, rather than just, like, making it like, this guy's way more important, we're going to take him, or he's more like, what's the basis for which they are taking these people?
But that goes to the fundamental problem with the WWE draft. And hopefully this year will be better than ever before. But the fundamental problem generally is drafts are about teams trying to improve, and you're rooting for your team to get a player to improve. Number one, the fans don't root for SmackDown or Raw. That's not a thing. We just watch SmackDown and Raw. We root for them both to be good. So there's already there's no rooting interest for the draft. It's already starting off from a position that's completely unlike any other draft.
Yeah, we watch both. It's not like
shows. The only argument that I have with people about what shows they watch are the people in my life who refuse to watch either WWE or AEW. And I go, what's wrong with you? Don't you just love wrestling? Don't you just want to watch it? Otherwise, I don't understand.
If there was a draft between WWE and AEW, now we're having a conversation.
That's exactly right. Now we're having a conversation. But
you know, whether CM Punk goes, or that's a bad example, but like whether Seth Rollins goes to Raw or SmackDown, I'm watching Raw and SmackDown no matter what.
So yeah, I watch them both every week. It makes absolutely no difference to me. Maybe, you know,
I guess how else do they switch it up, though? I understand.
You have to find a way, I guess, to mix it up. I just don't know that, to me, the answer would be, I don't know, does it have to be a draft? Like, is there another way to reimagine shuffling the lineups where it's not a draft? I don't know. They've been doing the draft thing for like 20 years. So there's something else I need to get off my chest this week. Very, very important. Another video is making the rounds of Ronda Rousey bad-mouthing WWE.
I don't know. Do we want to play that on this show?
Yeah, I do.
Perpetuating it?
It's not violence against a group of people. It's just that terrible take on wrestling.
You know, that's also why I really enjoyed being a heel, which I, you know, wish they would have let me be a heel more often, because that's where I feel like I was happiest, when I wasn't trying to placate to the crowd, purposely trying to, you know, piss them off and get a rise out of them, and not trying to constantly, you know, pander.
I was surprised to hear about the WWE that they kind of rewrite the script last minute and that it's not, I don't know, you think of such a big business, you imagine they got script writers and the scripts are written.
You would
years
think
ago.
It wouldn't be an absolute clusterfuck shit show, and you would be wrong.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. It was, and it's so needlessly dangerous. Like, no one can, like, a lot of times people can't rehearse, things are changed last minute. A lot of times you see them outside, they're performing, they've only talked about it. They're doing it for the first time. So a lot of these injuries happen because people just weren't able to rehearse and the company doesn't give a shit because we're all expendable to them.
Mm, interesting.
Did you feel expendable to the UFC? To the WWE?
Yes. Yeah. I think we all did.
So this is now like at least the third one I've seen of her just completely burning the bridge of WWE. And there are so many things that she said that bother me and that are just simply inaccurate. Number one, they're the only show on earth that is making live episodic television constantly. Okay. This and soap operas are the only thing. Now, I don't know. Maybe Ronda Rousey spent years working on Days of Our Lives and she knows how it is. She was at Guiding Light for 10 years and she knows how it is. But unless you already worked at another place that does multiple episodes of episodic television live in front of a crowd, I just think you're in no place to speak about how it gets done. Now, you could say there were things that were challenging about it. We all know about the last minute rewrites and there can be frustration and things like that that happen. But also, when you really think about it, it makes sense. It's a constantly evolving product. You could have an idea for something on Friday and you find out a superstar gets injured on Wednesday. It's constantly changing. But also, the thing that bothers me about Ronda Rousey most are two things. One, she's been intentionally disingenuous on this tour that she's been doing the last few weeks. Like, she's done things that really, I think, were intentionally done to make people, put people in a bad light and make people look bad. Multiple people have been in her crosshairs for whatever reason. And it, to me, it seems intentionally disingenuous what she's been saying. But what bothers me the most is you were given the best setup and opportunity probably in the history of wrestling when you arrived. I don't know if any, Dip, can you recall someone who came in to much more pomp and circumstance and was booked to be bigger than Ronda Rousey when she got there?
No, honestly, I don't think I can. She just never felt like she wanted to be there. The walk to the ring felt sort of
the worst walk to
odd and disingenuous, the shoulder thing. I just never liked the theme music, never sort of got me excited. And the leather jacket, I never thought was like a cool addition to the gear. And the moveset was like more of like a mixed martial arts moveset, which was cool at the beginning and then just started to feel kind of lazy eventually.
Right. You got to get better. You got to evolve more. It's not martial arts. You can't just be doing MMA style stuff. It doesn't.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to hate on her actual in-ring work. I don't think it was that, offensive. But then when, she got on the mic, I mean, they kept forcing her to go out there and speak in front of the crowd. She would open weekly TV, with a mic in her hand. And she clearly was not ready to do
Agreed.
That. And it just wasn't something that she was.
That's the one.
That's what sunk her ultimately. Well, that's what sinks people ultimately in general.
I agree. And I will say this. The only thing I'll give credence to what she said, even if I don't like the way that she said it, was A, that she shouldn't have been a babyface, because ultimately, yeah, listen to you. You're not a babyface. You're not a babyface. Like, that's just not how you come across. And number two, yeah, I guess she did need more time to rehearse. But you saying like, oh, look at all the time they've given Logan Paul. Logan Paul's gotten the opportunity. Has it crossed your mind? You don't know what Logan Paul's schedule is. And my guess is you had the opportunity to put in as much work as you would have wanted to put in too. Can we just be real about this for a second?
Ronda
Rousey is a dominant MMA fighter in her prime. She's an icon. She changed MMA forever. That can never be taken from her. I don't care what anyone says. She is among the greatest ever, and she was a groundbreaker, and she deserves her credit for that 100%. Logan Paul's a better athlete. He's a better athlete. I'm sorry. It's not even close. There's no world in which, even if you practice day and night, you're not going to be able to do the things Logan Paul does. He's a freak. He's one of the best athletes in the company. So the comp was so It just ended up feeling like such bitter grapes. It just feels so nasty to a place that paid you a lot of money, propped you up as a star. Obviously, none of us know the everyday things that happen all the time, but the light she's casting dipped to everyone makes everyone look bad. It's not right. I'm sorry, it's not right. If you had personal problems with individual people, all right, write about it in your book. But to tear down the entire business after you were treated like gold and made a ton of money, I'm sorry. It rings not only hollow, to me, it rings offensive.
I know nothing about it. I'm not going to pretend like I'm an expert on the day-to-day machinations of what happened with her run and that type of stuff. I could be totally off base here, but I'm just saying as a distant observer of Ronda and her run, it all changed when people started booing her. I think she got offended by it and was like, wow, a natural heel turn. I'm Ronda Rousey. That doesn't fit my profile. I'm everyone's favorite. And once she got on that mic and people knew she sounded sort of, she just wasn't a skilled speaker publicly.
Well, then they really want to boo you.
She leaned into the, like, I don't know if she leaned into it, but she basically was like, she like basically threw it away in the ring. She was like, I don't care anymore. Basically, that's how it felt. Then people just fully turned against her. And then it became sour grapes. Once they gave her the mic and then forced her to go out there and open the show on the mic when it was clearly the thing that she was weakest at, that was when everything changed.
And ironically,
she should have had Paul Heyman in her corner. She should have been Brock Lesnar, and she should have had a mouthpiece that just told everyone what a badass she is and how dominant she is.
Agreed.
She didn't need to tell anyone that.
Agreed. And at the end, towards the end of her run, when she was in a tag team with Shayna and started doing like regular matches and she wasn't a star, like she wasn't being treated like a star, that's when I finally started to see the potential. When she was just being like a wrestler at the end, her and Shayna were tagging, I was like, ooh, she's going to like just have regular matches now. They're going to build, she's going to put in the work now and then she can be meaningful. And as soon as that happened, it was the end. So like, you know, when the going got tough, you kind of got going in this case. And again, we don't know the entire story. But the risk you take when you feel like burning a bridge on every single podcast you do is that people are going to be left to the interpretations they can make. And this is the decision she's made. Every week I see another thing on my feed of her burying someone, burying this, burying that. It's getting old. I didn't tell you this last week. Do you want me to tell you some of the places people are listening in?
Oh, yes. Oh, my God. I'm so excited for this.
One of the beautiful things about looking at the back end of what's happening is you can see the countries that at least early on people are consuming the show in. So here we go. Location. I look at a full map here. I'm looking at a map. All right. The number one country for cheap heat listening dip. Guess what it is?
The United States of America.
You are one for one, sir.
Oh, I'm sorry.
All right. And what about number two?
London, England.
Incorrect.
Canada. Canada.
I see.
That is correct. Number three.
Australia.
You're messing up the order. You were right there. Three is the United Kingdom.
I see. Okay.
Four is Australia. Fifth.
Ecuador.
By the way, big drop off. I just want to be clear. US, big drop off to Canada and UK. Then a slight drop off between Canada and the UK to Australia. Then a significant drop off after that period from Australia to our next country. Here's the hint. There is a PLE emanating from this place in the future.
France.
Germany. Now,
okay.
After Germany, a very narrow victory over Iran.
That's wow.
Yeah. They must love that's a cheap heat drop at the beginning of the show.
That's a cheap heat.
After Iran, Ireland, New Zealand.
Big New Zealand guy.
The Philippines.
Oh, who doesn't love the Philippines? Beautiful this time of year.
And Japan.
Oh, very good. We love Japan. Never, by the way, my dream vacation. I've never done that. I would love to go. We go to Japan.
I've been three times. It's the best ever. There's no place better. All right, our top US cities, just to amuse Dip, and then we'll get to our big interview. New York would be number one. A city called Brooklyn is number two, which is interesting. Chicago is three. Los Angeles, California is four. Philadelphia is 5. We are, by the way, this is the Coastal Elite podcast of the Sesh.
I know.
And by the way, sorry, Chicago, you're included in Coastal Elite.
Yeah. Can I get some Omaha fans in here?
Then it's Houston, Charlotte, Queens, Atlanta, Washington, Columbus, Ohio, Seattle, Dallas, Minneapolis, Miami, San Antonio. Now we're getting to America. Portland, Phoenix, Orlando, Vegas, Newark, Detroit, Denver, Indianapolis, Sacramento. There you go. Indy. How do you feel about Indy?
Oh, I've never been.
I found Omaha. We have 117 listeners coming to us from Omaha.
Oh, mate.
We're big in Omaha. By the way, the next heat and greet, Omaha.
That's the cheap heat.
All right, Dip, thank you for spending time. Well, we look forward to seeing you on Tuesday. You know, we love Friday Dip.
Friday Dip is a different Dip, man. Oh, yeah. My God.
He's smelling the weekend.
Living for the weekend.
Living for the weekend, if you will. I apologize. I intended to get to some email. We've been getting so much. RosenbergBeats@gmail.com and have not had time to get to it. So next week, we will get to some of the wonderful email. So write us this week. We'll see you in the Discord, all that stuff. And now, a guest that I if I've had him on before, it was for a moment, but play the music, Emilio. John Bradshaw Layfield. How are you, John?
I'm doing wonderful, Peter. It's so good to hear from you. I got your text this morning. I thought, heck yeah, I'll get up. I got up, put my Satchel Paige replica Kansas City Monarch jersey on just for you.
I love it. I love this look for you. I usually am seeing you in a suit. I like seeing casual throwback jersey JBL.
Absolutely. I'm a huge fan of Satchel Paige. In fact, I'm going to the museum hopefully soon there in Kansas City to see some of the I just read a Buck O'Neill book from the old Black Leagues. What a great book. Corey Graves recommended it to me.
Yeah, I actually overheard you guys having that conversation. This is like a jersey that you could have stolen from John Cena when you were feuding with John Cena.
Absolutely, 100%. Back then I bashed it. Now I just wear it. I'm the old guy wearing a Satchel Paige jersey.
So how you been, man? How's life in general for John Bradshaw Layfield?
Things are great. You know, things are terrific. You know, I do a show every week with Mr. Briscoe, Gerald Briscoe. And the main reason I do it, we don't make money off it. We just have fun. And I get to talk to my friend all the time. We started it in COVID. And I realized that, and I'm not promoting the show. I'm just telling you what I'm doing. Actually, I am promoting the show.
Yeah, tell them the name of the show, for God's sake.
You know, we were just bored and wanted to talk to somebody. And so that's been the whole thing. So I literally talk to Mr. Briscoe almost every day about baseball, about a million different things. And it's just fun. It's fun going back as the old guy now and seeing everybody. It's like a family reunion. WrestleMania was a lot of fun to go to.
Yeah, you hadn't been around. So it was weird. So you started doing stuff on TV every week. And so then they pulled you off the kickoff shows at that point. And now things are kind of all different with the kickoff shows. But I hadn't seen you for a while. Did you miss sort of that? Because the kickoff show is the perfect way to be involved. You show up once a month, every couple months, say hello. And did you miss it, not getting to be around it there for a while?
100%. Yeah, it's so much fun now. You know, when I first retired, I got hurt and I had to retire immediately and didn't plan to. And then Vince and Kevin put me in commentary. And I didn't really enjoy it because I was really still wanting to be in the ring. Now I have no desire to get in the ring. So I just enjoy talking about the matches and these matches. These young guys and girls, they're just fantastic. It's fun to come in and talk about these guys and girls. But it's also great to see the people backstage. You know, sit in the dressing room. The dressing room, we sit in the TV room, whatever it is, the TV locker room, I think it is.
It's the best.
Corey Graves and usually Bobby Lashley and a bunch of other guys. It's just fun to be in there. The great banter.
Yeah, well, you're the king of that banter. The banter the banter circles around you and Book. If you or Booker is there, you guys kind of hold court, tell stories, and everyone sits under the learning tree. It's a ball.
It's, you know, the thing is when guys were, you know, I started the business, we didn't have social media. And so because of that, we had to entertain ourselves. You know, we didn't have a brand we were creating. We didn't have an outlet for our creativity or anything. So guys just sit and told stories. Guys would make up stories on the road and come tell them in the dressing room. It was some of the most fun times. You know, anybody who talks about the old days loves the banter that was going on because you had really creative guys having a lot of fun talking. And that's the one thing that I really miss.
So when you did initially retire, how old were you when you initially retired?
I think I was around 40, 41. I'm not sure. Somebody will correct me, I promise. But I'm not sure. I was older when I got the title. You know, I was in my late 30s, I believe, is when it was. You know, I'd worked with Ron, and I would have been happy being an APA member until I retired. I was happy with that. But Ron's 6 or 7 years older than me, plus he's had a ton of injuries. So it was time for Ron to retire, and all of a sudden I'm left on my own, and fortunately I got this incredible run with Eddie. So I was much older when I got that title run as part of my career.
You're born in 1966. Your big run on top was 06, basically, right? 05, 06, that range. 04 to 06, I guess. And yeah. So, yeah, right around 40 years old, did you think, like, all the different iterations that your character had, the, you know, Bradshaw character, Hawk, all those things, did you think that being on top of the mountain was still sort of out there as a possibility for you? Or had you been satisfied being like, hey, I'm happy to be a mid-card, upper mid-card guy. It's a good time for me.
Yeah, no. To answer your first question, no. I don't think it was – I didn't think it was a possibility. After 9/11, there was a big patriotic fervor, and I went over to Afghanistan, the first group to go into Afghanistan with Daryl Worley and Sergeant Major of the Army, 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, Jack Tilley. And that's when I came up with the idea for Tribute to the Troops. And after that, I was going to Iraq every year, sometimes twice a year, and I kind of thought that was going to be my role. And I was fine with that. You know, I didn't think this run was in the cards. You know, I was older, and I tried to come back for a couple runs, and every one of them got shortened somehow. Either the guy left the company that I was supposed to wrestle against, or I got hurt. I tore a bicep. I was supposed to come back again in a big storyline, and I got a hernia and had to have surgery. So I just kept getting hurt. I thought, man, you know, I might just be too old to do this. And I really thought that my role would be kind of as a liaison with the armed forces, but I was fine with that. I wasn't resigned like, oh man, I really miss being a world champion or having that run. I didn't think it was going to happen. So it was all just completely a surprise to me.
And then when you had it, it was a pretty glorious run. I mean, it really worked. It was when I was first getting back into wrestling. In my early 20s when you were on top. So I had been gone during the Attitude Era. I was in college. I was at the radio station. I was aware that wrestling was big at that time, but I just didn't have time for it at that stage of my life. So I came back in 05, and you were this monster heel who kind of was running roughshod over SmackDown. So not only did you end up getting your run, but it was so big. And in the end, you ended up playing such a critical role in the careers of several guys who went on to become faces of the company. I mean, John Cena, incredibly important run with you. Batista, incredibly important run with you. Rey Mysterio, incredibly important run with you. So, like, does that whole part of your career feel like a kind of a dream that wasn't ever even supposed to happen?
100%. You know, when I say I owe Eddie Guerrero 100% of my career for JBL, I owe him 100%. You know, that they would have never happened without Eddie Guerrero. I came back and they kind of created this JBL character, and it didn't work. It didn't work at all.
Was it your idea, the JBL character?
I don't know for sure. I know I'd pitched an idea that was very similar. It was kind of a J.R. Ewing type character. It was guys I grew up with in West Texas that I really hated. You know, guys, when I grew up West Texas, it was a poor era. It was a poor time. Oil prices had gone south. Cattle prices had gone south. People were very poor. We had a couple guys with DeLoreans and Lamborghinis driving around town, and they were just jerks. I hated those guys. You know, they were guys with money. They were redneck rich. They hit oil, and that was it. That's the kind of character I always wanted to play, because I thought if I hate those guys as much as I do, everybody else will hate me for playing those guys. So I had this idea. It was kind of also a combination with J.R. Ewing. I'd pitched that to Vince, but now I don't know if that's where Vince came up with the JBL idea or not, but I had pitched an idea very similar. Vince doesn't see it at all as J.R. Ewing, because I've heard interviews since. So Vince came up with this idea, and I don't know if my input had any influence on that or not.
Why was Eddie's role so important in your career?
When I first started, it just didn't work. People saw me as the beer drinking Bradshaw. I'd been going over to the troops. You know, it just didn't work. And people didn't see me as a main eventer. And so Chavo, Eddie's brother, came up with the idea to give Eddie's mother a heart attack in El Paso on Mother's Day weekend when they're honoring Gory Guerrero. It's very similar to an angle that he had done with Piper back in the mid 70s, I guess it was, in the Coliseum in LA. And maybe that's where he got the idea. But they pitched the idea to me, and we did that storyline. And when Miss Guerrero went down, I don't know what place held. It was sold out that day, and it was a, almost 100% Latino. They're all there to see Gory Guerrero's widow and Eddie Guerrero, her son. And then I come out, and she fakes this heart attack, and Eddie has been busted open with a chair, and he's down. Eddie looks at me and says, "Essa, you better get the F out of here. You're going to get killed." We had state troopers around the ring. We're filming it kind of like the old barroom brawl they did in Memphis, kind of from security cameras, so it looked more realistic. And the state troopers are going, "John, you've got to get out of here. This place is going to riot." Well, I'm thinking, I've got to get this on camera, because if I had to live to get through this, I'm the hottest heel in the world.
Right.
I knew I was. I knew then.
But this is not a TV. This is non-TV. This is a house show.
That's right. It's just a house show. And that's why people thought it was legitimate, I believe. And the place got completely silent. I mean, completely silent. Then you started hearing that rumble of, you know, a place about to riot. And they got me out of the arena. My car was running. They made me drive all the way to Odessa to fly out. They said, "We can't guarantee your safety. We think somebody might kill you here in El Paso." So I literally had to drive all the way to Odessa by myself. And of course, Miss Guerrero called me to see if I was okay. And you know, I'm like, "I pray you're okay, because I'm dead if you're not." So, and when that video aired, everything changed. We weren't selling tickets for the Staples Center. We was going to be a terrible show. It's going to be a one and done for me as JBL. And after that, the place sold out. I was told it set an attendance record that day, which is easy to do in wrestling, because you know, you fill the place around the floor. You don't have basketball. You don't have the space there. So everything changed. And it was all because of Eddie and his brother Chavo. So when I say I owe 100% of my career to Eddie, I owe 100%. Because think about what he did. He not only gave me the storyline that catapulted my career into this long championship run, he took the title off himself, essentially, by giving me this hot storyline. And Eddie was fine with that. Eddie used to call me all the time. He'd call me 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. He never slept. And he goes, "I got an idea, essay." And he would have an idea for me, even when I wasn't working with him. He loved the JBL character. Eddie and I got along really well. You know, I did part of his eulogy at his funeral. He was a groomsman at our wedding. We were good friends. So I had the
right person. When did that start? When did the friendship start?
We were from the same area. We never wrestled. You know, he was always in WCW or Japan, and I was always in WWE. But once we first met each other, we got along really well. I mean, you know, you're from the same area of West Texas, even though West Texas is huge. You know, there's a lot of commonality with Eddie. We always had a lot of fun talking and joking and banter, and we understood guys we hated. That's why we both understood the JBL character really well. We also understood the dynamic of immigrants into the country and how polarizing that was. And so that's another reason that we were able to be successful with the JBL character.
We live in a time now where the business is completely exposed practically all the time. And you are from a period still where, even though it was the 90s, it may have not been 1983, but it certainly wasn't 2023 either. To this day, I would imagine there are people out there who, even though they understand the wrestling business is a work, they hate your guts. And they associate you in an actual negative way with the Eddie Guerrero character, with the Rey Mysterio character. These guys who, even if they were to step back and think about it and go, "Well, obviously these were colleagues who were working together," there was something so realistic about what you did. Do you love that people feel that way? Or do you kind of wish, "Hey, at this point, do you guys realize now I was a character?"
That's a great question, because I don't know if I love it or not, or just kind of appreciate it that hopefully it was a good job well done, because people still conflate me with JBL. You know, people still consider me this right-wing crazy lunatic that hates immigrants, you know. So I'm the guy who's coming up with the storyline is the immigrant himself, which actually wasn't an immigrant. He's born in America. But yeah, I go down a couple weeks a month, take care of my mother down in Texas. And the yard guy just this past week was going, "Hey, can I ask you about something?" He was asking me about something with Eddie Guerrero. Like, "You got to be kidding me. That's 20 years ago." And so I told him the whole story. He thought it was great. And but yeah, I still get it all the time.
Like that. It's just such a mixed bag, because in one sense, what a tribute to how well you guys did the job. And in another sense, everybody else now, all the bad guys get to walk around and take pictures with people. Yeah. That wasn't the time that you lived in. I mean, you were, I'm guessing all the way through your big run on top, were you walking past kids in the airport? Were you full-blown living it all the time?
Yeah, I used to drive my wife crazy. It was 100%. I would never sign an autograph. I would never take a picture, nothing. Because the problem was, if you're going into the arena and there are kids there and their parents there, they're your hardcore fans, and they're going to be sitting up close. And if they're not booing you with real venom, then it hurts you. And so those are the people that I would purposely avoid and just walk past, just ignore, wouldn't say a word. I mean, I remember one time I was walking through an airport, and some lady comes up with her child and says, "Hey, look, I know it's all just acting and stuff. Would you get my kid a picture? I know you're just playing this bad guy on TV." I just walked on like I didn't ignore her. She looked at me, she goes, "You're an asshole." I go, yes. Thank you.
But there had to be times where it's hard, right? We're like,
there were times I'd sneak back around and give a kid an autograph or something where nobody would see it, you know, but yeah, it was tough. You know, but back then that was kind of expected. You know, Roddy Piper always told me that there aren't many people who really want to be a heel. And there really aren't. I mean, any generation, there aren't really people that want to be a heel. People say they want to be a heel, but they want to have a heel section. They want to be a heel, but they still want to be able to sell merchandise. People go, "Oh, you're a good heel." If people are saying you're a good heel, you're not a good heel, because people understand it's a work. People need to look at you. Like, I remember for one of the first times I ever ran into what they would call a smart mark back in the day. Mm-hmm. Somebody told me, said, "Man, I hate Killer Tim Brooks." And I said, "Why?" He said, "His work rate's terrible." And I'd never heard that term before. And I said, "Well, why do you hate him?" I just don't like him. It's not his character. I don't like him. I said, "Well, let me ask you a question. He's not a good worker, right?" And the person said, "No, a terrible worker." I said, "If Stan Hansen came in to wrestle Killer Tim Brooks, would you pay to go see it?" The guy, without hesitation, said, "I'd pay double." I said, "You're right. He's not a good worker."
exactly right.
You know, the guys that make you believe that you're the character, those are your real heels, and you don't know they're heels. If somebody tries to defend them, say, no, they're just playing a heel. No, they're really a jerk. I really hate
them. Right. It's not that. It's that. Okay, so then how about this, though? Then let's talk about something modern day. What does that mean for a Dominic Mysterio, who gets booed everywhere and people love booing him, but there does seem to be a wink and nod with the audience that they appreciate hating Dominic Mysterio? Or is that unique to his situation because he's a legit heel, but he is named Mysterio and there is just a thing there?
I don't know. I think it's probably unique to Dominic. Dom is awesome. There's not a bigger fan in the world of Dom than me. I tell him all the time how great he's doing. I remember one time he did an interview and I was there and he did half of it in Spanish. And people booed him like crazy. We're in a place that didn't have many Latinos. It wasn't like anybody knew what he said. He just said it with such venom that people booed him like crazy, not knowing he could have been reciting the phone book for Monterey. It doesn't matter. It was him. He was getting incredible heat, and he has the ability to do that. I mean, I am so proud of Dom. It's so good to see him. And I don't know if it's unique to him. Every heel's different. You know, there's attraction heels and here's heels. You know, like D-Generation X, the Freebirds, NWO, those were attraction heels. Roman Reigns, attraction heel. He sold headline WrestleMania more than anybody in history. You know, so there's nothing wrong with either heel. It's just a different version. There's also your pure heels, your Iron Sheiks, your Ted DiBiase's, your JBL's, your Roddy Piper's, your Gorgeous George's. You know, there's people like, it's just a different heel. They both can draw money just the same, but it's different.
That is a really interesting point. The attraction heel versus the just, and you, I mean, you never, until your career was over, did you have any real moment as a babyface? Like, once you were big time, was there a moment when you came out to Cheers?
No, absolutely not. Even, you know, they put me out there against another heel. They'd boo me. So, yeah, the thing was, I was very careful about, I mean, one time Vince pulled me aside and he says, "Don't be entertaining out there today. You know, don't be funny. Don't be out loud and don't be entertaining in a way that people are going to like you," because people were starting to enjoy the JBL heel. And so you got to be careful if you're that pure heel, as I talk about, compared to an attraction heel. You got to be very careful. If they like something, take it away from them. Don't give it to them. And they'll hate you for that, because they want to stay along with you. You go to say a catchphrase and they start singing along with you. I remember Road Dogg came out one time when he was a heel and somebody started singing, "Oh, you didn't know," with him. And he stopped and he goes, "This isn't sing along with Road Dogg." And the people booed him because they wanted to do that. Sometimes you got to take that away from them if you find something that people are starting to cheer.
That's one of the things I've been impressed with MJF. MJF is clearly appreciated by the fan base. But when, and obviously his most recent run, he was a babyface. But when the bulk of his young career being a heel, when the crowd gets too into something, even at a young age, he's realized I have to take it away and make them boo me again. Because the era that we live in, if you're too good at being a heel, yeah, people are immediately, you're going to become everyone's favorite. And you got to kind of fight that tooth and nail. But that's a very interesting anecdote to hear you say it. Are anyone else out there? First of all, have you gotten a chance to watch MJF? Is there anyone else out there you've seen doing heel work recently besides Dominic that you go, all right, there's something here?
I haven't seen MJF much. I've seen, you know, just social media stuff. You know, I don't, you know, there's so much wrestling out there and I'm still with WWE. So when I watch something, it's WWE because you only have so much time to watch. I got to meet MJF over in England, blown away by him. What a great guy. And the questions he was asking was very intelligent. He was asking stuff about Roddy Piper and being a heel. We shared a car ride together back to the airport. A really smart young guy. I mean, I'm a big fan of him personally. There's some pretty good heels out there. I mean, you know, it's Roman Reigns to me was a guy we never thought we'd see another dominant run like Bruno Sammartino or Hogan had. We never thought we'd see that in the modern era. For Roman Reigns to do that was one of the most incredible things in the history of the business. And now Cody following that, I mean, this is historic times right now.
I admit I'm one of the people who early on, when Cody lost at WrestleMania 39, I thought, okay, it's a matter of time before he turns. This, it can't last. And now here we are more than a year later, he's world champ and people are still cheering him. Is there a part of you though, just being such a heel, that you look at Cody's look, his style, the suits, and just can so easily picture how iconic a heel run someone like that could have?
Oh, absolutely. No, there's no doubt about it. You know, you look at guys, get off Cody for a second. Look at Austin Theory. I mean, that's a good looking young guy. Great body. That has got Gino Hernandez heat written all over it. I mean, that is just, and Austin Theory is another one of these guys. I'm blown away by the young man. He talks to me occasionally when I'm there, and the questions he asks are different from what everybody else has.
Really? So he has he gets it.
100% he gets it. I'm blown away by the intelligence of Austin Theory and the questions he asks about wrestling. They're the ones that get down to the nitty gritty about drawing money. I love that. And Cody, to me, Cody's been successful everywhere he's been. I'm such a fan of Cody. You know, I was tag team partners with his dad's tag team partner, Dick Murdoch. And of course, loved Dusty like everybody did, but his brother Dustin. But Cody, to me, he left. He could have taken money and stayed with WWE. He bet on himself. And that is remarkable. And look what he's done with it. He's held titles everywhere he's been. He's headlined everywhere he's been. Now he's headlined two of the biggest WrestleManias back-to-back alongside Roman Reigns. That's incredible. You know, it's hard to find somebody to stand across from Roman Reigns. You got The Rock out there. You got Paul Heyman out there. You've got history on Roman Reigns' side. For somebody to stand across from him, that's all next to impossible. And Cody Rhodes did it and filled that role. And now he's the one that took over from Roman. It's a heck of a run.
The night when he slapped The Rock back, it was him in the ring with Seth and Roman and The Rock. And I went, oh my God, Cody's the man out there. Like that's an insane accomplishment. Speaking of The Rock, were you impressed with The Rock's willingness to go as far as he went with this final boss situation in the last several months?
Yeah, absolutely. I expected it. And I say expected it because expectations are outsized when you talk about The Rock. You know, I was there when The Rock got hot and he would go after, you know, these Attitude Era cards that were just loaded with talent for 3 hours in live events. And he would get the microphone and for 30 minutes say all his little catchphrases and stuff and entertain people who had already seen 3 hours of wrestling. It was one of the most remarkable things to this day that I've ever seen. We'd sit there and watch and go, no one else in the world can do this. he's just that gifted. I figured he would do the right thing for business. I mean, and just kind of, it was kind of an expectation. You know, he looks like, as Kevin Nash says, he's the only guy who looks better than his action figure.
I know. It's insane. What was your relationship like with Young Rock when you were, I mean, you guys really were kind of finding yourselves at the same time to some degree in WWF.
Yeah, I worked with Rock some when he was Rocky Maivia. We were over in England. I think I wrestled, I remember specific matches and matches later with him. I got along fine with him. You know, I wasn't in the role that he was. You know, he was dealing with Undertaker and Stone Cold and Triple H and Shawn and those guys. I was, you know, in a role lower on the card, but also in a role in a tag team. You know, so I wasn't, didn't have much direct influence with him. But Rock's always been the nicest guy. I mean, I've run into him, you know, so many times over the years. He's just... there's not a star probably bigger in the world than The Rock. I mean, it's insane. I mean, you might can name a couple guys, but if you do, you're naming guys that are, I mean, to be in that category is incredible. And he's just like he was when he broke in, from what I've seen. It's just incredible. He's one of those guys that has made it huge, that doesn't have any detractors, any real detractors. That's incredible that you don't have people that are just jealous of him going, oh, he doesn't deserve that. He doesn't deserve that.
On one of the A&E documentaries recently that I saw like a year ago, Austin talked about how when they came up to him and said, he said, how's the merch doing? And when they said that Rocky was getting close with the merch, that's when Austin was kind of like, oh, really? Did you sense, were you able to sense any level of competition between them when they were both at their heights?
Yeah, absolutely. And we knew how lucky we were at the time. You know, business was terrible. I came in 1995, at the end of 1995, and business was horrible.
Not a pretty time.
We had the NWO with us. We had Bret Hart with us. We had all of the guys that would be these incredible characters in the Attitude Era. You know, Kane was a dentist. Triple H was an aristocrat. Steve was a ringmaster. You know, you had guys that were there, but in gimmicks that didn't work. Scott and Kevin were Razor and Diesel. You know, and then all of a sudden this whole place explodes. When Steve got hot, it was unbelievable. You could put his name on any building in the world, and we sold that arena out. That's how business just went from nothing to I'd never seen anything like it. And when The Rock came along, you always had a tough time finding an opponent for Steve because he was that hot. When The Rock came along, we realized we got somebody that can go out there with Steve and actually go toe-to-toe with him. We knew that Rock was getting over like crazy.
Well, listen, I know you have a lot of things to do. If it's all right with you, I would like in this new era of the Cheap Heat podcast, I would love to have these conversations in a semi-regular way. Now, I don't want to be responsible if the world actually finds out that you're not a horrible guy.
Good grief, it'd be terrible.
No, I don't want anyone to know. I do want to have more of these conversations. I do fear that over time they may figure it out. But if you're up for it, John, I'd love to have you back on to just shoot the shit every once in a while.
You know, when I called me and asked if I'd come to Oklahoma, you know, I'd fly myself into Oklahoma to do a promo on them. You know, I've had a rivalry with Oklahoma my entire life. Half my family's from there. So it's always fun to go bash Oklahoma. But when you walk out, people hadn't seen you. I go, oh, man, it's JBL. And they go, I forgot he hates us. So, yes, Peter, Peter, you're the best. I love you. You're so much fun to always be around. We had a good time with you at WrestleMania, and you killed somebody there, and we don't want to.
Let's not talk about that. You know what? Next time you're here, because I haven't told the audience yet, next time you're on, we'll reveal the murder that I committed over the weekend.
We had a lot of fun. But, Peter, I've always had fun with you. We always had a great time with you. So anytime you want me to come on, Peter, I will put on – I actually have – I don't have a Jackie Robinson, but I do have a Nolan Ryan and a Babe Ruth.
All right, so save the jersey. It'll be your gimmick when you come on the show. We look forward to it.
That's right.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, Peter.